Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode number 24 of the Finger Lakes Golfer Podcast on FingerLakes1.tv and YouTube, recorded live on Monday evening, May 15, or 20. What's today's date, Bob?
26th.
26th. It's Memorial Day 2015, yes. Coming at you on a special holiday edition. I'm joined in studio by my co-host, the Big Easy Bob LaPrade, and on tonight's episode, we'll talk about the Nitro scoring system and why you might want to use it for your group. Vice Golf, we've talked about it a lot on this show, and they have been sued by Acushnet along with 10 other ball manufacturers. Okay, they're calling it Dimplegate. And tons of local golf news and tournament results to report, and my Zen tip of the week, understanding the three facets of your mind. So, Bob, happy Memorial Day. How you doing?
Good evening, Jim. How you doing?
Not too bad. Now, long weekend of golf, huh?
Oh,
Memorial
yeah.
Day for a lot of golfers. How many rounds did you get in?
Three.
I got in three as well. You didn't play this morning, neither did I, but I did play Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Yep, same with here.
And congratulations are in order. Your team won the Seneca Falls Country Club Scratch Series three-man scramble on Saturday.
Absolutely.
A lot of good players from around the area show up and play. And in your team of LaPrade, Jason Peral, and Ben Wong took home the honors with first place, minus 12, which scores are a little higher than I thought. Yeah. I mean, I was predicting minus 14 for the three-man.
Right.
But pins were really difficult. They set up the course very difficult.
Yes, they were.
Yeah. And so, you know, how did it go? You guys just hot with a putter? Just play well? Everybody putter, pitch in?
We chipped one in for eagle. We were short-sighted on one hole, and everything else was putting. We all putted very well. Everybody contributed. It just wasn't one or two guys. Each one of us had a long putt that we made, and that's what you got to do in those type of events is make sure you can make those putts, otherwise you're not going to score.
And we finished at 10 under, I think. Actually, I know we finished at 10 under. Two back of you and one out of the money. But we had a good time out there, had a nice little round. We were actually 8 under after 11, and we parred 13, 14, 15, 16, and 17 before eagle and 18. We started on the first hole where there was a shotgun start. We happened to be on one. And, the pars on 14 and 15 were devastating. Those are two holes you're looking to birdie on your own ball, let alone a three-man scramble.
Right, right.
And we had very short putts and tough pins. Both those pins were tough.
Yeah, I agree.
But it was a great event, and be back for the next Scratch Series event in Seneca Falls on June 27th, and that'll be the two-man. Mm-hmm. And details on that are at SenecaFallsCountryClub.com. Well, that was Saturday. Then on Sunday, Bob, we played in the our normal Sunday group of 12 guys, and we use a scoring system called Nitro. And it's based on Stableford scoring. Not exactly, but the same concept where you get points for certain scores on each hole. And it's a scoring system we developed a long time ago. We used to do it on Friday nights. We'd call it Friday Night Nitro. Anybody could show up. And the great thing about the Nitro scoring system is it accommodates golfers of any skill level without applying the handicaps in a way where you got to give a stroke to this guy on this hole. Or it is really geared to let you apply the handicap so as the round goes on, you forget you're even playing in a handicap event.
Right.
So let me explain a little bit here, I guess. Generally, you can, if you get a bunch of guys with the handicaps, start out before you tee off on one. If you're a 14 handicap, you have 14 points to start. If you're a scratch golfer, you have zero. And then you will play the first hole, and I can pull up the scoring system right here so you can see it. You get minus one for a triple bogey or higher, zero for a double bogey, 1 point for a bogey, 3 points for a par, six for a birdie, 10 for an eagle, and 12 for a double eagle. And so after the first hole, if you start out with 14 points and you parred it, you now have 17. Mm-hmm. And then on the second hole, if you bogey it, you have 18. So on and so forth for everybody, either in your group or in your extended group. Either in your foursome or your extended group, because we have 12 guys, three foursomes. And the great thing about it is, as you go on through the round, by the time you get to the back nine, you're just reading off points. So mm-hmm. the 14 handicap, you might say, oh, Mike's got, Mike has 47 points, Bob has 43 points, and Jim has 41 points. And nobody remembers what they started with. So right. you're just like coming down the stretch, you get to play almost head up.
Right.
Without thinking of handicaps. And everybody really likes this scoring system, Bob. I don't know what you think about it.
Well, I like it because it every week that we've played it, it's been pretty tight. It's been close. You know, coming into the last three or four holes, we've had a good run at it. If, you know, we were all in it at one point or another. So I found it to be... fun. It kind of takes it's a little bit better than giving strokes on specific holes or giving someone a total amount of strokes before or you know after the round's been done or completed. I think it's it seems like it's more competitive and fun.
And over time it's been proven that all sorts of different levels of players can win this thing. As a matter of fact, mm-hmm. this year, so far on Sunday mornings, we've done it three times.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had one of the best players win the first 2 weeks, a couple of the single-digit handicappers. And then just last week, we had the highest handicapper in our group win it.
Right.
So it is. It's fun. It's recommend you to give it a shot if you have a group of guys that are playing. And you mentioned it being tight down the stretch. This week, I was paired with Bob. And, geez, I think on the 16th hole, I was one down.
Mm-hmm.
I bogeyed 16. You doubled it.
Tripled it.
Oh, you tripled it. Yeah. So
I lost a point.
And I ended up getting up a stroke.
Mm-hmm.
You get lost a point. I gained a point. And then on 17, I hit a pretty good shot to a back left pin on the par 3. Just off the green into the rough where I was actually still putting it, probably only about 15 feet from the pin.
Mm-hmm.
You blew your tee shot way right.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm thinking, all right, I'm going to pick up some more points here before we get to 18. And then Bob hits an incredible pitch shot. it really was a good pitch shot.
Thank
and you left yourself about 10 feet for the par, and mm-hmm. you made it. Mm-hmm. And I made my par. So we continued to the 18th with me having the lead by one. And then... even off the tee, Bob, you were a little left. I was right down the middle feeling good. And then my second shot on the par 5 went right into trouble. Long story short, Bob makes a great par. I make a bogey. 3 points for Bob, 1 point for me. He ends up taking me by a point
mm-hmm.
for second place.
Yep.
Or maybe it was third.
Second, I think.
So, yeah, and we pay out for second, third. Actually, another tip is we have charts. So we have a chart based on how many people are playing. Because early on in the year when the weather's not good, sometimes maybe only 6 of the 12 show up.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe all 12. So we have a little chart that shows what the payouts are. And what we do is we throw in $15 a man. And that gets split up between skins and the Nitro system. And then we also, anybody that wants to, can throw in $5 for low scratch. So we have this chart. So when we sit down, instead of figuring out how we're going to divvy up the money, it's right there in the chart. We had 10 players that week. It says who's got first, second, third. It's all worked out beforehand. So it's we have a lot of fun, and we actually are using our stroke averages after 3 weeks to determine the Nitro point system as opposed to the handicap to try to keep things even. The guys that have started out poorly and haven't been able to win any money will have a better chance going forward, and the guys who have won, it'll be a little more difficult.
So the guys that have been playing poorly get a little point jump. After 3 weeks, the guys have been playing great, might get a decrease.
And again, like I said, by the time we get to the back nine, nobody's thinking, oh, I got to catch up to this guy who started with 15 and I only started with 7.
Mm-hmm.
By then, it's just like, oh, I'm 3 back. I'm 3 points back. I can get that back on this next hole with a birdie.
Right.
So,
yeah.
It's the Nitro scoring system. And let me put that up there for you one more time for your perusal. Write it down if you want. And I guess, Bob, this could be adjusted easily enough. like, for instance, originally, I don't think we had any minus numbers. I think it was double was zero. Anything higher than double was zero.
Mm-hmm.
But just having that minus one in there for triple adds a little more intrigue, maybe coming down the last couple of holes where you're trying to catch up.
I agree.
So yeah. if you're for instance, 2 points down on the 18th tee to somebody, a par, well, you can imagine the scenarios where just losing that 1 point would be bad. So, and then a lot of people say, well, geez, why don't you go for more points for an eagle or more points for a double eagle? First of all, you never see a double eagle.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not really worried about the double eagle, but you might think you'd double that birdie to 12 for an eagle. That's kind of how they do it in the Stableford scoring system on the tour. But my thought on that is, and this has been tried and true over the years when we used to do this, is who's more likely to make that eagle? One of the better players. And right. So if you allow them, and usually the higher handicappers will make no eagles all year
mm-hmm.
long.
Mm-hmm.
So you want it to still be a big boost for the guy, but you don't want to make it eliminate. For instance, if one of the higher handicappers gets a bogey on a hole and one of the lower handicappers gets an eagle, if it was 12 points and one for the bogey, then they would pick up 11 points on that one hole.
Right.
Where the higher hand, so if you're a 15 handicapper playing against a 5 handicapper or 4 handicapper, that player's much better than you, and in one hole you can just eliminate your entire advantage.
Right.
So that's kind of one reason why it's like that, but you can adjust it to your own liking. What I based it on was somebody showing up with a USGA handicap can just easily get in the game. Never had to worry about, and back on Friday nights when we used to do it, somebody might say, oh, I don't want to play with you guys, you know, I'm just starting, I can't even break 90. Don't worry about it, you know, I guarantee you'll have fun, mm-hmm. and it'll be competitive. And mm-hmm. also, it gives those guys a chance to compete against better golfers and get that type of,
right.
you know, little thrill of playing down the stretch against some good players.
Right.
So, that's the nitro golf. Maybe I should patent that.
You might want to.
Because our next story involves...
It's a good segue.
If you've listened to this podcast last couple weeks, last 3-4 episodes, we mentioned Vice Golf Balls. As a matter of fact, we got a promo code we'll give to you a little bit later in the show. But sure enough, Vice Golf, along with 9 other ball manufacturers, discount balls, I guess you might want to call them, were sued by Acushnet, the parent of Titleist, over... What Acushnet said in the court documents is a die pyramid 318 dimple pattern that is used on a lot of these other balls. And they claim that they had a patent on it in 2002 or 2003. And this was first filed back in April in a federal court in Boston. And it said a triangular die pyramid dimple pattern. And among the defendants is Vice Golf. The companies are named as defendants. They are by and large very small companies. In some cases, we're talking about, you know, just a website and a logo and a garage, you know,
mm-hmm.
And a nice marketing hook. Some of these guys are basically operating out of basements. The reasonable inference is that these companies relied on the Taiwanese manufacturer Foremost is the manufacturer in Taiwan who makes balls for all these companies.
Mm-hmm.
They all come from the same factory. And they also offer the engineering and design and production of the balls, this company in Taiwan, this Foremost Golf. And that would include the dimple pattern in question. So Acushnet seeking an injunction and damages. And is demanding a jury trial. As it stands now, nearly everyone is lawyering up, and no one is talking specifics on the record. So, if you're Titleist or Acushnet, I guess they don't use any special materials that aren't available to anybody else. The only thing you have, I guess, are the patents to kind of protect you. So I can see where they're coming from, but. You know, as with all patent lawsuits, how can you even make a golf ball that probably doesn't infringe on some one of Titleist's or Callaway's or Bridgestone's patents, where they've all gone to court. Callaway and Titleist have gone to court. Mm-hmm. That lasted several years, and it ended up not even, they ended up sharing each other's patents at the end of it. And then Bridgestone also sued Titleist, or Acushnet. And for a while there, Titleist had to pay Bridgestone a percentage for every ball they made that fell under Bridgestone's patent. Well, a lot of these smaller companies, it sounds like they really just kind of turned over the design of these things to this Taiwanese company, and now are facing lawsuit, and there's no way they can afford the lawyers that Acushnet can. I don't know your thoughts on it, Bob.
Well, it sounds like, and I'm kind of guessing here, that this Taiwan company had molds, and they, you know, these smaller companies were going to them to contract these golf balls, and they were using whatever mold they had in the factory on certain balls, and that's what they got. And it sounds like that dimple pattern, Titleist is claiming intellectual property, that it's their intellectual property, and that, I don't know, it seems to me, at my level, it sounds silly to fight over a dimple pattern, but I guess when big companies have something they want to protect, and I guess something else that's interesting here is Titleist doesn't even use the dimple pattern.
Yeah, the weird thing is that Titleist doesn't currently have a ball on the USGA conforming list with 318 dimples. It's just a patent that they had back in the day.
Right.
That I guess they never manufactured balls on. Also interesting, the ball that we've really been touting on this podcast is the Vice Pro Plus. And right. That doesn't fall under this. That has 366 dimples. The Vice Pro has 318.
Okay.
And you're talking about 3-Up Golf, Dixon Golf, Kick X Golf, Lightning Golf, Monster Golf, Rife Golf, I Need the Ball Golf, Saint Nine Golf, and Arriva Golf are the defendants along with Vice. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if they're all going to try to get together. I know that at least one of the manufacturers, I think it's 3-Up Golf, discontinued making that the ball that was in question.
Mm.
So... also, I guess, Bob, doesn't this kind of validify what we've been saying
mm-hmm.
about the Vice ball being as good as a Pro-V?
I think it does, yeah, a little bit, yeah.
And so doesn't that kind of say that Titleist balls are way overpriced? Because they can't spend that much in R&D.
No, I guess after you originally, you know, done your R&D, you've eventually get a return on all that money you spent on the R&D, and then you just start making money. You know, every year Titleist has the newest, best Pro-V1, but and all the golf companies do this. They all look the same to me and seem to perform the same every year, but they seem to claim that they're longer and they're performing much, much better than they have in the past. Kind of the same thing that's happened in the driver companies as well. You know, every year drivers are getting longer and more accurate, but, you know, it doesn't seem that that's the case.
Well, how much can you do within USGA's conforming rules with any equipment? And I almost kind of feel like it's a bit of a, I don't want to say a scam, but how can you make better clubs every year on year, you know, when you have limits as to the materials you can use and the, like, there's only so much you can innovate. So I almost think it's kind of, I mean, honestly, were clubs that were made, irons, let's say, that were made 15 years ago, any worse than the ones made now? If you got a brand new set of Callaway irons made in, you know, 2005 or 2000,
mm-hmm.
would they really perform worse than the clubs today? I don't think so, because the scores are all the same.
Right. Yeah. Yep.
Well, it's certainly interesting. Something we're going to keep an eye on.
Yeah, it'll be Dimplegate.
Dimplegate. And that's kind of silly, too, because Dimplegate, you know, the everything that's gate, like Deflategate with Tom Brady.
Yeah.
Watergate is called Watergate, not because it was some type of gate. It would happen at the Watergate Hotel. The Watergate Hotel has nothing to do with this.
Right.
Or Tom Brady.
Right.
It's just every controversy now has to be called Gate. It has nothing to do with Richard Nixon or Watergate.
Right.
It really doesn't apply at all.
No. No, it doesn't. Good point. Good point.
So, Bob, did you check out the Crown Plaza Invitational?
Yes, I did catch most of the end of it. It was pretty good.
And it was Chris Kirk making a putt on the last hole to win. And it was 12 underscore was the tally. He edged out Jason Bone and Brant Snedeker, each at 11 under.
Mm-hmm. And Jordan Spieth had a good run.
Spieth finished at 11 under as well. Bone, Snedeker, and Spieth tied for third. Ian Poulter was in fifth at 10 under.
Yep.
And it was the first time we've really seen Spieth since the Masters win. Now, he took a lot of time off. He did play at the Players, though, right?
Yeah, I think he did.
He didn't play too well. A little hangover from the...
Right.
But I think he took some time off, and now he's obviously back tying for second. Chris Kirk, 30 years old. That's his fourth tour win, his biggest win to date being the Deutsche Bank last year in September. It was part of the FedEx playoffs, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And he also won twice on the Nationwide Tour back in 2010. He's played in eight majors. His best finish tied for 19th at the U.S. Open in 2014. So we'll see if this second win in less than 12 months propels him in the upcoming majors.
Yeah,
we got the U.S. Open at Chambers Bay coming up in about 3 weeks, and then shortly after that, the British Open, and then shortly after that, the PGA. Right. When the golf majors get rolling, after you got the Masters, you know, early in the season, then there's a little break, and then it's like bang, 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 U.S. Open, British Open, and then a few weeks before the PGA.
Correct. Yep.
So, subscribe and like us. And, you know, hit that thumbs up button below here if you're watching us on YouTube. Click the red subscribe button. Make sure we're always in your feed every new episode. And we're also available on iTunes, Stitcher.com, or the FingerLakes1.com app. It's free at the Android or Apple stores. So, Bob, no pick of the week this week, huh? Too busy golfing for Memorial Day three times this weekend.
Yep.
If you have any suggestions for us in terms of products you want Bob to take a look at, send us an email, contact@fingerlakes1.com.
Absolutely.
With the subject line of FLX Golfer, and we'll be sure to respond back and take a look at what you got. So, mentioned before, Bob, the promo code for the Vice Golf Balls.
Mm-hmm.
And these are good for all the products, not just the Pro Plus, which we enjoy, and which, boy, we've turned on some people to them, huh?
Yeah,
for sure. I actually found one in the woods, and it wasn't mine.
Right.
It's like Seneca Falls is coming a hotbed for Vice Golf.
Right, yep.
I know of two people that placed orders.
Yep. I played them all weekend.
Yeah, you and I are both playing Vice Balls with the FL1 Sports logo.
Right.
Which is... It's a rare ball.
Yep.
It's one thing to play a Vice. It's another thing to play it with the FL1 Sports logo.
I agree.
So we had to be careful when we marked our balls and make sure that we really took a look at them before we hit our shots.
I had the green dot. You had the black dot.
Yep. And different numbers, we should say. Or maybe they weren't. They might have even been the same number.
I think they were.
Well, if you want to get some of these Vice golf balls, you can head over to vicegolf.com. And you can add a logo of your own or any custom text for free through June 15th as long as you enter the promo code FINGERLAKES. That's all one word, FINGERLAKES, 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 promo code, free logoing on your Vice Golf Balls, and you can get yourself a dozen Pro Pluses for like $32.95. Or if you get three dozen, they drop the price down to $29.95.
Wow. Yeah.
Which is unbelievable. And $7 shipping, I believe, covers as many dozen as you get. So if you get one dozen, $7. If you get five dozen, $7. And that logoing's about a $7 a dozen savings there. So remember that promo code, FINGERLAKES. Head over to vicegolf.com. Don't worry, Titleist can't sue you.
Right.
Well, and so maybe you should get them now while you can.
Yeah, order in confidence.
So looking at the local golf calendar and news, Skaney Atlas High School graduate Eric Edmonds will return to his hometown soon to start his new job as assistant pro at Highland Park Golf Course in Sennett. After graduating from St. Peter's University this spring. So good to have a hometown kid back serving as assistant pro at Highland over there. And they say Sennett, basically Auburn. Sennett's right next to Auburn.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Good course. So good luck, Eric, over there at Highland. Joel Jakubowicz and Philip Griffin shared medalist honors on Thursday during the third and final day of qualifying at the 59th Post-Standard Amateur Tournament. Both put up five over par 77s on the leaderboard at the Pompeii Club. Daniel Wright finished two strokes behind the medalists with a 79 and five others. Mike Carroll, Thomas Curtin, Joseph Felicia, Adam Ellis, and Craig Marcinkowicz, or Craig Marcinkowitzki, something like that. Mm-hmm. They tied for eighth. They all shot 80s. And Marcinkowitzki's, should work these out before the show. His round was highlighted by a rare eagle 3 on the 17th over there, Highland. Wow. You remember that hole?
Yep.
He made a 3. That's an eagle. And the cut fell at 12 over 84. 22 of the 47 players will advance to the main 72-hole tournament. Those 22 qualifiers will join 70 others from the first 2 days of qualifying, 34 players from Liverpool, and 36 from Rogues Roost East, as well as about 40 previously exempt players. The tournament is contested on four consecutive days over four different courses, beginning June 3rd at Cazenovia, and then it continues June 4th at Beaver Meadows, June 5th at the Cavalry Club, and concludes June 6th at Drumlin. So, great amateur tournament there. The Post-Standard, and obviously Post-Standard being the Syracuse newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
Mentioned the Scratch Series at Seneca Falls Country Club. Congratulations, Bob. Also happening in that event was a hole-in-one by Scott Harris playing out of Honeyoy.
Yep.
Aced the 12th hole, won one of two skins. I think it was a $500 win there for that skin. The other skin was recorded on hole 6, an eagle by Panic Panic Good. Mm-hmm. Panic Panic Good also came in second place in the event. And the next Scratch Series event at Seneca Falls Country Club is Saturday, June 27th at 1 o'clock, and that's the two-man, the summer two-man. And then this continues in the fall. End of September is another two-man. End of October is a three-man. So good tournaments, good turnout, yeah. Bunch of good players, good guys come out to play in that. On the Central New York PGA Tour last week was the Sun Mountain Classic at Beaver Meadows. Mark Tucker took home the $800 first-place purse, shooting a -369, edging out Rob Phelps, who shot -1. And tomorrow, normally the Central New York PGA plays their events on Mondays, but because of the holiday, they're playing tomorrow at Wayne Hills up in Wayne County, the National Car Rental Scratch Pro-Am.
Nice.
Tuesday event. So we'll have those results next week. May 29th at Timber Banks is the New York State Open qualifier. And Shane Dobish defeated Sean Baker 6-4 to win the Rochester District Golf Association Match Play Championship at Ontario on Sunday. In the semifinals on Saturday, Dobish defeated Zach Ottman 1-up, while Baker defeated Andrew Daly 3-2. And in the senior bracket, it was Mark Battle defeating Steve Schickler in the final match. In 2015, the New York State Golf Association Foundation will award $30,000 in scholarships to New York State residents who are matriculated in specific 2 or 4 year college university programs such as agronomy, turf grass management, professional golf, and country club management or business management of golf. Thanks in part to donations from the New York State Golf Association members and member clubs. The New York State Golf Association Foundation is able to annually award deserving individuals with funds that help to reduce their college financial burdens and pave the way to careers in the golf industry. To learn more about the scholarship program or to download the scholarship application, visit nysga.org. Deadline to apply is Friday, June 12, 2015. Also, save the date on Wednesday, June 17th at Seneca Falls Country Club because it's the Seneca County House of Concern 4-person scramble. $340 a team or $90 a person, going for a great cause, great day of golf on Wednesday, June 17th at Seneca Falls Country Club. Hole-in-ones this week, I did mention Scott Harris. He used a wedge to ace the 120-yard 12th at Seneca Falls Country Club on Saturday. Randy Walker aced the 163-yard 16th at Millstone Golf Course using a pitching wedge. Carroll Corey used an 8-iron to score a hole-in-one on the 6th hole at Greystone. One of your favorite courses.
Yes, it is. We got to get out there.
Langston McFadden aced the 190-yard 11th at Lakeshore Country Club using a 7-iron. Peter Paulson used an 8-iron to ace the 170-yard 2nd hole at Cobblestone. Bob Sheridan used an 8-iron to score a hole-in-one on the 133-yard 2nd hole at Canandaigua. And Lynn Fofey aced the 120-yard 3rd hole at Camillus using an 8-iron. Send us your hole-in-ones. Contact at fingerlakes1.com. Subject line FLX Golfer. And obviously we'll read them on the show. Yeah, I know I've asked you this before, Bob, but you ever had a hole-in-one?
No, never.
It'll happen sooner or later.
Yeah, someday. Maybe.
No, it will. It's just random. I mean.
Yeah, right.
You know, how many times have you come close on, say, hole 12 at Seneca Falls?
I guess it depends on what you call close. I've been like maybe two.
That's close.
Two more rolls.
Yeah.
And it was in. But other than that, I don't think on that hole it's.
You hit the pin a few times on some par threes?
Nope. Par threes aren't my strong suit.
Well, they are for Lynn Fofey.
Yep.
She's got one up on you.
Yeah.
Or maybe more. I don't know how many aces Lynn has, but she got one this week at Camillus. So, probably going to be a little shorter episode here on a Memorial Day. We're already getting down to it. And I guess it's time for our Zen Tip of the Week.
Zen Tip of the Week.
So the Zen Tip of the Week this week, coming straight from the pages this week of Zen Golf by Dr. Joseph Parent. And it has to do with helping you understand what goes on in your head over the ball. So you got your, according to Dr. Joseph Parent, you have your thinking mind, your intuitive mind, and your critical mind. So the thinking mind is that voice in your head when you are evaluating your distance and the wind and what club you're going to use, basically shot prep, or any conscious thought, I guess, that you kind of have. And a subset of the thinking mind would be the critical mind. The critical mind looks at things as good or bad. So, I don't want to say critical. That word itself has a negative connotation, but it's not always bad. But the critical mind it thinks of things in good and bad. So a less optimistic person will think bad more than good, usually when their critical mind is in action. And then the intuitive mind, this would be a good way to explain what the intuitive mind is a worm went up to a centipede and said, "How do you manage to walk with that many legs?" And then the centipede thought about it and he started tripping and getting tangled up. You know, because his intuitive mind knows how to operate all those legs, and then if he stops and thinks about it, he can't do it anymore. So the intuitive mind, a lot of things, I guess, that go along with intuitive mind would also be like muscle memory. So a lot of people say, oh, you've got to develop muscle memory. What you're really doing is your intuitive mind is getting better at doing a repetitive thing. Mm-hmm. It's not really, your muscles don't really remember things. I don't think it's, but your intuitive mind does. Mm-hmm. So it's not so much a tip here as to let you kind of understand what those three different voices in your head or ways of thinking, I guess, are, so you can understand when you're approaching your ball which one is talking to you. Because ideally you let the thinking mind and the critical mind do their work before you step into the ball, and when you start that pre-shot routine, let the intuitive mind, you know, take over. which is easier said than done, because more often than not, most people, even good golfers, get over the ball, and their thinking mind and their critical mind are hard at work.
Right.
You know, keep it low on the takeaway. Watch out for the woods on the left. You know, this doesn't feel right. This doesn't look right to me. And
right. And
none of that, all that will interfere with the intuitive mind doing its job of, swinging the golf club.
The description of the centipede, I think you said, would be, paralysis through analysis, right? You know, you start getting over the ball and you're thinking, oh, I got to hit these positions on my way back. And
it's all too much.
Yeah, it is. It's too much for you to do in that short span of time from when you take the club away from the ball and then you hit it. All that work should be done somewhere else, right? You can't do that out on the course.
You shouldn't, yeah.
No.
But even me, Bob, probably almost a 10-year student of Zen golf, who really tries to take it to heart out there, I have changed a lot of my behaviors on the golf course, and I think it's helped me in a lot of ways to enjoy myself more. But even I really struggle with letting the intuitive mind take over when it comes time to hit a shot. One aspect, and this isn't all-encompassing, but just recently, earlier in the year, say 2 or 3 weeks ago, I was really struggling with my short game and, simple shots, I guess, I was struggling with. And recently, I've just kind of stopped thinking about things and just kind of imagine the shot I want to hit and just keep my head down and execute on it. And those shots have come off way better than where I was really grinding out a short game shot, trying to land it exactly here and, maybe even double or triple guessing myself on what club to use for certain shots. I've pretty much, unless it's a straightforward chip shot where I might use a 9-iron, I've been using just my sand wedge all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
And so the short game's been okay, but I've been, in those cases, able to silence my thinking and critical mind and just let the intuitive mind take over. Now, it's not foolproof. On Sunday, I was below the pin on a par 3 on hole 12 with the most straightforward chip shot you could possibly have. And I got caught up with wanting to not go beyond the hole. And I didn't have a perfect lie in the rough, so that had me concerned, but the lie wasn't that bad. But I was a mess over the ball, and I should have stepped away and just let the intuitive mind take over, because what happened was, I got so wound up that I ended up sculling it 30 feet past the hole and then had a really tough downhill two-putt, which I don't think I was successful in two-putting. I think I three-putted it. But anyways, that's the Zen tip. Be aware of who's talking to you inside your head. You got the thinking mind. It's all there. It's very necessary, the thinking mind.
Mm-hmm.
You need to make decisions out there about what club to hit and how far you're away and how much the wind will affect it and where the good and bad misses are. You need to think that stuff through before you hit the shot. The critical mind, also very important. And the critical mind a lot of times takes place after you hit a shot, and it will affect future shots. If you're hard on yourself, that's the critical mind. And a technique that Dr. Joseph Parent is a proponent of is almost every shot you hit has something good about it. It might not have gone in the direction you wanted, but it went a good distance, or it may have come up short, but it was just a crisp shot, and it really sounded good or felt good. Or you miss a putt, but you got it to the hole. Or you missed a putt that was short, but it was right straight. There's almost every shot, except for maybe a dead shank, has something redeeming about it. And what Dr. Joseph Parent wants you to do is focus on the positive so you're not so hard on yourself. It's kind of tough to be positive, though, when you duck hook one into the woods.
Mm-hmm.
Well, boy, that was a crisp hit.
Right.
I feel good about that.
Right.
That one sounded good coming off the club.
Right.
I'm going to hit a provisional.
Well, you could always pull back memories where you've done that before and still part a hole or, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do that with rounds, especially at our home course at Seneca Falls. The first hole is a birdie hole. It's one of the easiest holes on the course.
Mm-hmm.
Walk off with a bogey. Usually not too happy, but right. I remind myself of the times where I bogeyed that hole and shot. I bogeyed that hole once and shot a 71, for example.
Nice.
And there's two ways to look at it. If I just parted, it would have been a 70. But I also may not have shot that 71 that day if I didn't bogey that hole, because I might have that bogey kind of shook me up a little bit maybe that day. Right. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, but definitely a good technique is to remember when you bounce back from something that happens bad to you on the course. You know, whether it's a early triple bogey. We can all think about those times that you've tripled a hole early and still broken 80 maybe.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
So, and then the intuitive mind, just let it take over. You'll enjoy yourself. Let it go. You've hit many golf shots before in your life. Don't get wound up. Pick a shot that you feel comfortable enough to let go with.
Right.
You know, if you're trying to hit a shot that you aren't comfortable hitting, it's really difficult to let your intuitive mind take over. And, Bob, that's also the intuitive mind, very important on putts. If you're standing over a putt and you're saying, just hit it harder. I got to hit this one harder than I thought, or I don't leave this one short. That's your thinking mind. And an example from the book is if you're giving someone directions and there's a gas station that's 2.5 miles down the road and you can only tell them it's 2 miles or 3 miles, then somebody's going to be going 0.5 mile too far and somebody's going to be going 0.5 mile too short.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you say to yourself, I got to hit this one harder or softer, what does that even mean?
Right.
You know, yeah. Harder than what?
Yeah.
Those are general things. And so if what you need to do is imagine the length of the putt and imagine how it'll feel when you hit it, and then have enough confidence when you get over the ball to let your intuitive mind take over. Try to repeat that stroke.
Sure.
So all these voices in your head and ways of thinking are come into play on almost every shot you have out there. And so that's this week's Zen tip. Just be aware of those things, and so you can manage it better.
You reminded me, just to add to that, there was a time years ago when my expectations were so high. If I bogeyed the first hole, I was so upset. You know, my round was done, right? But in reality, there was a high probability I was going to get a bogey somewhere in that round. At least one, right?
Yeah.
High probability. So years later, I looked at it that way. You know, if you birdie your first hole and it happens to be one of the easiest holes on the course, you got to remember, you're probably going to have a bogey somewhere in your round.
You're probably going to have more than one.
Right.
And then likewise, you're probably going to par or birdie a hole. You're probably going to birdie a hole you didn't expect to, or you're going to maybe par one of the tougher holes
right.
that will negate it. But there's just, even that bogey on hole one is about, you know, you're talking about, you've only played 4 or 5% of your shots for the day after that one hole.
Yep.
So, and a way I look at that stuff too is I kind of break it up, the round up into thirds.
Mm-hmm.
So, if I'm standing on the seventh tee and I had a horrible start and I'm 8 over after 6 or something like that, I remind myself that I've only played 1/3 of the holes. If I can play the next second third of the holes, which would be holes 7 through 12, at even par, then all of a sudden now I'm only 8 over after 12, and that's mm-hmm. a little more acceptable. And then, so I tend to break the round up into thirds that way. Try not to think too much about the score, but if I am off to a bad start, I remind myself that I've only, and it can happen after 3 holes. That's even better, because now you've only played 1/6 of the holes that you'll play. And so you have so much of your round ahead. Just play those holes good and everything will even out at the end. But I think a lot of folks, including you and I, always tee off with the thought of, I'm going to shoot a 70 today. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not going to put any expectations on how low I can go. And so when you bogey the first hole or triple bogey the second hole, it just kind of blows it up because you know that special round isn't happening today. Mm-hmm. It can still be a good round. You can still get the score around where your handicap or better and feel good about it. You can still win some cash maybe.
Right.
But you're not going to shoot a 70 like our good friend Mark Hillwood did when we played with him on Friday.
Right, yep.
Now there's a guy, Bob, that he doesn't need to listen to no Zen golf. He's like the ultimate Zen golfer without even trying to be, without even thinking about it.
I agree.
Just gets up and hits it. He shot a 70. He parred the first 13 holes.
Yep.
Missed a lot of makeable putts, too,
mm-hmm.
before birdie in 14. Then he goes ahead and pars 15 and 16. And then the one probably shot that he hit worst of the day was on 17 on the tee. He hit it fat, but he still got enough of it where it bounced short and rolled up to about 10 feet, and he made that putt for birdie.
Right.
And then it's funny because talking about the Zen golf stuff, Bob, and this guy was, like, perfect all day and just unstoppable. And I think driving to the tee on the next hole, I said to you, you know he's going to birdie this hole for a 69.
Right.
And you're like, oh, yeah, yeah, because 18's an easier par 5.
Right.
And so we get on the tee, and all of a sudden Mark says something like, oh, this is a big hole. This is a big one here.
Yeah.
Because he knew that he was 69, a lot better than 70.
Right.
It's probably been, he shot a 66 from the white tees last year, but this from the blue tees, who knows how long it's been since he's been in the 60s.
Right.
It's not easy to do. And so he recognized this is a big one here. And what happens? He struggled to make a par. He had to make like a 4-foot par putt.
Right.
He had no birdie opportunity. Mm-hmm. And that, and you pointed that out to him. I don't think he wanted to, I don't think he thought anything of it. No, I don't think he wants advice from you or I.
No.
He's won the club championship 9 times.
Right.
Just shot 72 under par with no bogeys at all.
Yeah. He doesn't need advice from us.
But I to me, it was pretty clear that he got in his own way there because he started thinking about what would happen at the end of this hole where all day long all he did was hit this shot straight and hit another one on or near the green and just go about his business.
Mm-hmm.
So, and Bob, I should mention too, you played great that day, firing a 76,
mm-hmm.
and you doubled the 17th hole.
Yep.
And I'm going to bring up, I guess this is an extended Zen Golf segment because I'm going to bring up something that you said right before you hit that ball in 70. Now here, I think you might have saved a nice par on 16. Is that right? Or did you bogey 16?
I'm trying to remember. I played so much golf.
Either way, you were great. You were hitting great shots. Your bad shots weren't that bad. You putted great, and you were 2 over par on the 17th tee. And you step over the ball right before you step into the ball. You said, if I'm going to miss this, I want to miss it right. Mm-hmm. And guess, everybody, listeners at home, I'll give you a free sleeve of Vice golf balls if you can guess where Bob's ball went.
Yep.
Dead right. And to me, that's proof. That's what happens. You recognize the right, but you went beyond just recognizing that. Right before you stepped into the shot, you said, if I'm going to miss it, I want to miss it right. Like, yeah. So you actually said, I want to miss it right. And what that does to your psyche, you know?
Right. My mind only heard I want to.
Your thinking mind, yeah. And your intuitive mind maybe caught up on that a little bit too and said, oh, yeah, I can do it over there. That's easy. Yeah. That's the bailout.
Right.
To the right. And you end up doubling the hole. So, which was unfortunate. Any time one of the guys I'm playing with, even an opponent, is having a good day, kind of want to see him, kind of watch him a little closer down the stretch.
Yeah.
And I think, Bob, what you should have done there is you should have said that, but not right before you step in the ball. You should, when you're preparing for your shot, you say, oh, if I want to miss it, it's going to be right. Because left, there's bunkers and trees.
Yeah.
And right, there's just a bunch of grass and a cart path. But still, it's a tough, the best place to be is on the middle of that big green.
Yeah,
and you hit that was the worst shot you hit all day.
Right, yep.
So, congratulations, Bob, on playing some pretty decent rounds lately. I'm like really struggling score-wise. I feel like I have some stretches where I'm playing good, but haven't really put it together and actually posting my scores on the Gin app, looking back to The past few years, there was a stretch where I had four straight rounds between 71 and 76, and there was a stretch of 10 or 15 rounds or so where I had like 90% of the rounds in the 70s, and the other ones just low 80s. Well, my scores this year, geez, maybe I should pull it up before we get out of here, because it's my handicap's going to be going up soon. Mm-hmm. They take your top 20, last 20 scores, and then they take the best 13 of those to determine your handicap. Best 10. Mm-hmm. So there you can see it on the Gin app. I got me right now as a 5.4, or is that 6? Yeah, 5.4. Free app.
Yep.
$15, I think, to get a Gin number, though.
Right, yeah.
So let's look at the old stats here. Yeah, here we go. 83, 85, 80, 87, 82, 78 on May 9th. That was a good day. 80 on May 8th. So, hey, May 8th and 9th, I'm like, all right, we're shaking off the cobwebs here. But I couldn't improve on that. Before that, I got an 84, an 86, and an 87 carded. The 87, actually, though, was at Rio Seco Golf Course in Las Vegas back on January 23rd. So you can post scores from any course, and maybe, Bob, we should do a show on handicap and slopes.
Sure.
Because everybody should have a handicap, and there's lots of ways to get it. You can get your official USGA handicap or through the New York State Golf Association here through the Gin system, or you can go on any number of websites and enter your scores, and they'll give you your handicap.
Yep, yep. There's quite a few free ones out there.
Yeah. So, maybe we'll do that soon. Also coming up in future weeks here on the Finger Lakes Golfer Podcast, we have Rhett Ticone will be back in studio. I thank him for coming in last week with Josh Desane from Lions. Mm-hmm. But Rhett played Chambers Bay, the site of the U.S. Open.
Oh, nice.
So we're going to have him in here. He didn't play it recently, a couple years ago, I think.
Yeah.
So we might have him in here the week before or the week after or both. Because he should have some nice insight into that golf course, which has created a little bit of controversy heading into the U.S. Open.
Yes, it is.
I think one of the USGA members said something like, if anybody thinks they're going to come here and take two practice rounds, they're not going to win the tournament. And a lot of the tour players are being like, well, who's this guy? You know, that's what we do. We go to a course, we play a couple practice rounds, and we play the tournament. And, right. and on paper, that course really isn't any more difficult than your average tour stop, let alone U.S. Open.
Yeah. I follow Ian Poulter on Twitter. He seems to be pretty
vocal.
He's
a good follow,
He's been pretty vocal about it. I guess the setup's going to be, they're suggesting, I don't know if they've changed it yet, sloped tee boxes.
What?
Yes, that's one of the suggestions that they may have sloped tee
boxes. Who's suggesting that?
The USGA...
like uphill or downhill or side hill?
I think side hill was...
That should not happen. Your team there should all be flat. I haven't heard that one.
Yeah, that was what kind of got all the players kind of fired up. And I guess this few of them have played there, and they said the setup's a little sketchy. So we'll see. You know, it's always been criticized. Almost every year it's been criticized for one thing or another.
The U.S. Open.
Yeah. So,
and one of my favorite tournaments, though, and it really is one of the only tournaments, golf tournaments, where they really do try to keep the winning score around par, it seems.
Right, yeah.
Like the Masters is always around 10 or 12.
Right.
Under the PGA, it changes from place to place, but generally those scores are in the high single digit under pars, like 8 or 9 under, 6, 7, 8, 9. The British Open seen some really low scores, but the U.S. Open, they generally, you know, you can sometimes, they say if you can get to 3 or 4 under, you got it wrapped. So we'll see if Chambers Bay provides that type of challenge in a few weeks here, and Rhett Ticone be back in studio to help us talk about it as he played the course. And so that's coming up on Father's Day. It's going to be a West Coast Championship, which means prime time on Sunday night, which will be fun.
Yeah, that will be fun.
So, Bob, thanks for coming in on Memorial Day evening.
No problem.
Just a couple days till we play again on Wednesday night, hopefully, if the weather holds, some thunderstorms in the forecast.
Yeah. Let's hope it does hold up.
But happy Memorial Day to everyone out there. The official, unofficial start of summer is here, and got a great season of golf ahead. So, once again, remember to subscribe to the Finger Lakes Golfer Podcast on YouTube by clicking that red box below if you're watching us on YouTube. Give us a thumbs up if you like the episode, and look for us on iTunes, Stitcher.com, and on the FingerLakes1.com app, free at the Android or Apple stores. So email us, send us your photos, your videos, your links, your events from your course, your applications for tournaments. We want to promote local opportunities for golfers to take advantage of. Just email us at contact@fingerlakes1.com, subject line FLX Golfer. And so we hope you had a great time hanging out for us on this Memorial Day evening. For episode number 24 of the Finger Lakes Golfer Podcast, we'll be back live next Monday night at 9 p.m., until then, hit them long, not often.
Great local content like this by becoming a patron of FingerLakes1.com. Visit patreon.com/FL1. FingerLakes1.com.